Anybody here ever been involved in a move? And some here are very much presently involved in a move. Moves are hard work. I mean, the first thing you have to do is you sit and begin to sort what things you're going to take with you, what things you're going to throw in the trash, what things you're going to give away, what things you're going to try to sell, because you realize that as I'm making this move, I can't take it all with me. Isn't that amazing? If your life is like my life, your day is very busy. You are actively engaged in whatever labor or responsibility that you have. And basically, when you think of that busyness that you have each day, often wishing you just had a few more hours to get done all you needed to do, even if it's a student who has a paper to write and they're a little bit behind and the thoughts aren't coming and they know the deadline is class first period tomorrow, they wish they just had a few more hours that night either to cram for the test or to prepare the paper. We all are so busy, involved in the activities that we have to do, and when we get involved in our adult lives, that busyness is all associated with either paying bills, meeting our needs, or accumulating things that we can have or we anticipate having for the future, isn't it? There's the busyness of our day. But when we get ready to move, there's a real awakening. Some of these things that I thought were so important, they're trash to be thrown out. Other things that I thought were so important, I learn I can do without. Or sometimes I find that there's a limit on how many pounds I can have taken with me in that move. At other times I find what I have rented in the way of a truck or a van to make this move, it's got limited space. And I begin to realize I can't take it with me. Now, while you may not be as actively engaged in your life in a move as is true of Tom and Tish right now, there's a move coming that we're all going to have to make. We all will make. And the reality is, you can't take it with you. And that becomes a very important thing for us to remember as we're engaged in the rat race of the day, where I'm just working my fingers to the bone, involving all of my energies just to get done what I need to get done to pay my bills, to meet my needs, to somehow gain things that I believe are going to make me comfortable and happy. Solomon has something to say to us in that regard in Ecclesiastes chapter 2. And we remember that this is a persuasive speech that was recorded by Solomon for the benefit of people in his own day, preserved by God for the benefit of people in our day. And in this, Solomon is asking the fundamental question that is pertinent for every one of us. What really will make you happy? What really will give you fulfillment in life? What really gives you lasting satisfaction and a feeling that your life has meaning and purpose? And Solomon begins in the introduction by saying, well, when you look at the things of this world, you find no matter how much labor is done, there is this perpetual cycle that reminds us of the fact that nothing that is temporal is permanent. That no matter how well-intended your efforts are, it all has limited value and impact. And in chapter 1, verse 12, through chapter 6, verse 12, Solomon is going to prove his premise that nothing in this world provides you with meaning, purpose, satisfaction, and fulfillment in life. Now, as we've looked at chapter 2, Solomon has been telling us that he had the opportunity to have everything this world could offer. And there's a very real sense in which we can say of Solomon that he was an individual where money was no object. And he told us that whatever he desired, he acquired. He accumulated things that you and I cannot even begin to imagine. He involved himself in forms of entertainment where money was no expense that limited what he could do. He found every way to try to satisfy and gratify his longings and his desires. And the conclusion was, the enjoyment that I had is very short-lived. We all get tired of the temporal things. So we need new furniture. We need new clothes. They're not in style anymore. We need new vehicles. Temporal things always wear out. And we always think there's something new, something better, and if we don't have it, and boy, the advertising occupation knows how to play on that, doesn't it? You deserve something better, something this, something that, just to make yourself happy. Solomon says, don't buy that line, because it won't give you what your soul really craves. And then as Solomon continues to prove his point, I want to begin reading in verse 12 through verse 23. He said, so I turned to consider wisdom, madness, and folly. That is, as we looked at last time, I'm contrasting a person operating by wisdom versus one who doesn't have a clue as to what's going on in life. He's just kind of rolling along, bouncing along, going with the flow, doesn't even know which end is up. And he says, for what will the man do who will come after the king except what's already been done? He said, you tell me, what new endeavor can someone ever follow that I haven't already pursued? And I've told you my conclusion of what happened in my life, and that is, I found I still wanted more. When do you have enough? You know, everyone will say it's when I have just a little more than what I presently have. It's that continual craving to get more because I believe that's what's going to make me happy. That's why when Paul wrote to Timothy, he said, godliness with what? Contentment is of such great value, because what drives the non-believer is the accumulation of things. And what sadly has happened to the American church is we believe things is what will give us happiness and a sense of well-being. And he says, what can you do that the king hasn't already done? And I saw that wisdom exceeds folly like light over darkness. The wise man has his eyes in his head. In other words, he can perceive what's going around him. He can look at the things that are coming to pass and make the decisions that are for his best good. But the fool walks in darkness. He doesn't have a clue as to what's happening in current events, what's going to take place, because as he pursues something that's to his detriment, how people are always so shocked that, you know, they get burned when they play with fire. When they have the detrimental results that come from a lifestyle given to debauchery. You know, our medical system says you and I are taking care of people who have just said, I don't care, I've abused myself, and now we have to take care of them in their medical needs. He says, the fool has no clue as to where he's going. But then he said, but you know what the real dilemma is? My wisdom doesn't enable me to escape death. The same fate affects both of them. The trip, the move the fool has to make is the same trip, the same move the wise man makes. The same fate befalls them both. Then I said to myself, as the fate of the fool, so it will befall me. So why have I been extremely wise? So I said to myself, this too is vanity. Now part of why Solomon wrestles with that, he had already said at the conclusion of chapter 1, that with much wisdom there is much sorrow. Because I begin to understand the dilemma of where man is. And I don't have an answer of how to improve man's condition or to bring him out of that endless cycle of futility. You know, we as a world, we moan the calamities that come to people in the world. And yet man will never come up with a solution of how to take care of man's problems. And so why have I been so extremely wise? I can't escape death. I still have to make that move. And therefore, to have a life devoted to just being the smartest kid on the block, to have all the answers to all the problems, doesn't make any difference because you can't change them. And beyond that, the next generation that comes is going to go through the same thought process. You know, when I was growing up, and I'm kind of like Hartson's age back then, I thought the dumbest people on the earth were my parents. And somewhere around 25 years of age, I wondered how they got so smart. It wasn't that they were dumb, it was my misperception, wasn't it? Because the new generation goes through the same struggles, the same problems, and doesn't want anything to do with the thought processes of the older generation. It's out of date. It's not fashionable. It's not what everybody else is doing. And so he says, verse 16, there's no lasting remembrance of the wise men as with the fool, inasmuch as in the coming days all will be forgotten. Now, we look at previous generations. We can maybe look at photo albums. We maybe have some digital types of pictures or videos of them. But we don't really know what even our ancestors were like. It's all a distant memory. And for the bulk of the people in the world, they don't really care about my ancestors any more than I care about yours. Solomon says the same fate befalls all people. So I hated life, for the work which I had been doing under the sun was grievous to me. Because everything is futility and striving after wind. Thus I hated all the fruit of my labor for which I had labored under the sun. For I must leave it to the man who will come after me, and who knows whether he will be a wise man or a fool. Yet he will have control over everything or all the fruit of my labor for which I have labored by acting wisely under the sun. This too is vanity. Therefore, I completely despaired of all the fruit of my labor for which I had labored under the sun. When there is a man who has labored with wisdom and knowledge and skill, then he gives it to his legacy, to one who has not labored with him for them. This too is a great evil and vanity. For what does a man get in all of his labor, in all of his striving with which he labored under the sun? Because all of his days, his labors are what? Sorrow and grief. Even at night, his mind doesn't rest. Now, if you don't think Solomon hit the nail on the head, then I don't know where you're living. And especially in our American culture that is so motivated by things, 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 with that ridiculous mindset that the winner of life is the one that has the most things. Got to keep up with the Joneses or everybody else. We just got to have it. And all of life is involved in this intense labor to accumulate things. And what we fail to remember is, I got to move. And I can't take it with me. So when you tell me, well, you know, I don't really have time to study the Bible, I don't really have time for spiritual things, you're telling me you're a fool walking in darkness and you are consumed by the things of this world instead of what really matters and is lasting. The option is there for each of us. Where is our focus? Are we, like Jesus said, the individual that is laying up treasures on the earth? And that's what controls our heart. And we fail to recognize that temporal things are always temporal. That no matter how enthused I might be about something new today, it's going to lose its luster tomorrow, and I want something more. Or are we an individual that recognizes this is a blessing God has given as I pass through life and I am looking forward to the kind of delight and joy and pleasure that He gives that there's no ability to measure. It doesn't pass away and it gives me eternal, everlasting fulfillment. A grievous task in all of my labors. Now let's look at what Solomon says. As we look at this section, he is looking at all his accomplishments in the world. And as he looks at all of those accomplishments, many of which he enumerated in the first part of this chapter, he begins to evaluate the reality of that final leveling enemy called death. And he says, it doesn't matter how smart I am not going to escape death. It doesn't matter how many technological and medical advances that we may make, I'm not going to escape death. Death is the fate that falls on each one of us. And so he says in verse 17, so I hated life. When he looks at the reality that I can't take all of these things with me, I have to leave them for someone else. You'll notice in verse 18 he said, thus I hated all the fruit of my labor. Now Solomon is using a very strong word when he says hate. But what Solomon is saying to us is the fact that he begins to analyze what he thought would give him satisfaction and fulfillment in life, and he recognizes, I've been duped. I thought that the idea of God's blessing on me was that I have so many things. I believe that I'm in a good situation because I live in a country and in a culture where people in other parts of the world can't even begin to imagine what you and I call our daily needs that are extreme luxuries in our existence. And Solomon said, even though they gave me satisfaction and joy for that brief moment, and I had the capability with all of my resources to go for something bigger, something better, to find a new exciting thing to give me a thrill, it's let me down. I've been duped because I can't take it with me. And I begin to consider, why is a man's life so enamored with, so consumed by, so controlled by the things of this world, when none of the things of this world will I take with me when I pass through death? This idea of hate means that it becomes distasteful to me. It's a word which has to do with something that now has changed my outlook, and I don't look at it with the same favorable response that I did before. It is volitional. It's the same thing that Jesus said to his disciples in his own day when, going back to the verse that I quoted, where you need to be sure you're laying up treasures in heaven rather than on the earth, because you can't live for two masters. You will always hate the one and love the other. That's why you can't live for God and have at the same time your consuming passion the things of this world. What we have translated in our English versions as mammon. Basically, it'd probably be better to say for today, things, materialism. You can't live to just accumulate all of the things of the good life here and now, and at the same time say, I'm living for God. Because when you have two masters, one eventually takes the priority over the other. You can't serve God and also live for things. Doesn't mean you don't have things. Doesn't mean you don't enjoy things. So please hear my clarification. But what is your life focus? Solomon says, basically, people fail to recognize time waits for no man. It passes quickly. And there is a moving day for every one of us. The same fate falls upon each individual. And the other thing that I need to be sure I remember is I don't know the day of that move. I can't say when I'm 80 years old, when I'm 90 years old, when I'm 100 years old, because when I look in the cemetery, I find people a few days old. I find gravestones to children. I find teenagers there, young people there. You don't know your moving day, but the reality is when moving day comes, there's no room on that van in your move to take anything from this world. So the thinking person ought to say, then why have I had my life focus on trying to find some sense of satisfaction and gratification in what this world can offer? As a Christian, I recognize that whatever I have been given by God, He has given it to me to enjoy. And the blessing that's associated with serving Him and living for Him is He provides an abundance beyond what we need, isn't it? I mean, God doesn't just give you your daily bread. You have things beyond number that have been provided for you. But moving day is coming, and you can't take any of the things of this world with you. That's why Paul, when he wrote to Timothy, said, guess how you came into this world? You didn't come with any gold teeth in your mouth. You didn't come with a lot of little toys to play with. You didn't come decked out in the finest attire. Naked you came into this world. And that's the same way you're leaving. You can't take it with you. So what Solomon wants us to do is to stand still for a moment. Get off the treadmill of the busyness of life. And think about, why is my life consumed with just trying to live for the things of this world, when there is something far more important, and that is to be prepared for, ready for, the world that is yet to come. And where in the presence of God, it's not just passing joys, but it's the fullness of joy forever. It's an elation that never subsides. There's no downers in that time when we're in God's presence, because at His right hand there are pleasures forevermore. You can't even begin to count, enumerate, imagine all that God has prepared for those who love Him. My life is busy. How about yours? And what is so sad is most of my life is occupied with, got to pay the bills. I need to meet my needs. Need to accumulate things for replacing what's wearing out. And when that tyranny of occupation with the things of this world becomes so dominant that it erodes the time that I can have for spiritual things, I've been duped. I've begun to think that what really matters and what's really important are the things of this world, rather than recognizing what really matters and what's really important is cultivating my relationship with God. So regardless of what comes upon me in this life, I'm ready for it. It won't overwhelm me. It won't blow me away. I'll have the ability to cope, because the unexpected is certain to come to every one of us. And you can't get ready for it when you're in the middle of it. And the second is, regardless of how much I want to block it from my thinking, regardless of how much I believe I'm young and invincible, it doesn't matter what kind of a person you are, death awaits you. And every time you have the joy of getting together with family to remember your birthday or someone else's birthday, it just means you're another day closer to that reality. We celebrate how many years we've lived on this earth. And the question is, am I ready to meet my God? To take that move into eternity? And where is it that I'll be spending eternity? Because you can't take it with you. So Solomon says, I hated the fruit of my labor. It duped me. I had a sense of well-being. I had momentary gratifications. And yet, I can't take it with me. On the other hand, he says, not only that, but I have to leave it to somebody else. Now I know as parents, and you think about your children, and you think about what God's blessed you with, and you do your wills, and you get them ready for other individuals. But what Solomon is saying is, you spent your whole life working yourself to death, and you're not the one enjoying what you've worked for. You just leave it for someone else who didn't work for it. And who knows what they're going to be like? And the reality is, you can't tell them to do with your things what you want them to do. You have no control over it. They'll do with it what they please. And in some senses, there might be a sentimentality that they'll have, oh, this was my dad's, this was my mom's, it's important. But I'll tell you, by and large, they're going to have an estate sale. You see them all the time. Why is it they're doing that? Because what mom and dad or my relative thought was so valuable, it doesn't mean anything to me. And you spend all your life accumulating these things that you can't take with you, and they'll mean nothing to those that have to sift through what they're going to say, all this junk you've accumulated when you're gone. My family's already let me know the dumpster comes to the house when I'm gone. So I don't have to wonder what's going to happen to all the things I thought were important. Doesn't have the same value to them, does it? There might be some value that something you have to you. But you understand, you can't take it with you. I have to leave it to someone else. I don't know whether they're going to be wise with what I leave them. Now, there's part of what they'll be happy about. If I leave anything in my bank account instead of just a lot of indebtedness, they'll be happy about that, won't they? We got bucks to spend. It's kind of a bonus. We didn't work for it, but we get it. And sometimes families even squabble over how much of a percentage of the money that was left needs to go to me or to someone else. And it develops tensions in the family as they try to divide up what really has value. And Solomon's point is, I have spent my days using the knowledge, the skill, the wisdom that I have to be successful. There is no getting around the fact that Solomon was a tremendous administrator. There's no getting around the fact that Solomon knew how to get things done. We understand it was the blessing of God to grant peace and to give Solomon that wisdom, but Solomon was efficient. Solomon brought a golden age to Israel as has never been since. And yet he left it to someone else. And how much effort, how much time, how much energy, how much resource did they deprive themselves of to receive it? The answer is zippo. Absolutely none. I can remember with my parents at times saying, well, instead of giving you this, that, you need to work for it because you won't appreciate it if you don't work for it. There's a sense in which that's true. They also said to me at times, what do you think, money grows on trees? I was hoping. You see, you don't have the appreciation for it if you haven't invested something of yourself to get it. And I have to leave it to somebody that made no investment in getting what I leave behind. So he says, what futility? What striving after the wind? What a vain, empty pursuit. Because what's characterizing my day? Notice what Solomon says in verses 22 and 23. What does a man get of all of his labor? And this term, or this phrase here, is from a Hebrew term meaning, what's your real gain? What real lasting benefit have you derived from your labor? And in his striving with which he labors under the sun, because all his days, his task is painful and grievous, that even at night his mind doesn't rest. This too is vanity. I circled in my Bible how many times Solomon uses the word labor. In just this one little paragraph, 8 times. And you understand that what Solomon is saying is associated with Solomon recognizing you and I live in a world that is under the curse. And living in this world under the curse, things don't come easy. Because God said, you're going to bring forth the fruit of the ground by the sweat of your brow. There is a labor that has to be expended. It's tiresome. It's wearisome. It causes us to grow old, to get broken down. It causes us to have anxieties. It causes us sometimes to have medical problems because we're so stressed with all that needs to be done. And Solomon is saying, I have spent day in, day out, working night and day to get things, to meet my needs, to pay my bills, to think that these things are what will make me happy. And if I look back on my life, my life has been a preoccupation with my job, with my task. Now, you don't think that's true for us? I mean, we look at people and we say, well, that person's got a good job. And we think that they're a more important person because they're not the ones that are doing one of the menial tasks, don't we? We begin to look at someone's worth by the kind of profession that they have. And the reality is, it doesn't matter if you're the greatest surgeon. It doesn't matter if you're the president of this country. It doesn't matter what kind of influence you might have on others. Life is tiresome. Punching the clock and doing the daily task wears you out. And if you're engaged in these daily tasks when you lay down to sleep at night, your mind is still running at 1,000 miles an hour. You're either rethinking what happened that day and, oh, I should have done this and maybe I could have done that and maybe it would have been better if. And then the other part of it is, well, when tomorrow comes, this is what I'm going to do. And I start planning about how I'm going to take care of the things that are yet ahead of me, so I have a strategy to be a success. I become consumed with my toil. Now, this is not something just Solomon would say. Moses stated in the Psalms, as for the days of our life, they contain 70 years. or if due to strength, 80 years. Yet their pride, their boasting, what causes us to think we're important is what? Labor and sorrow. Isn't that true? You get together with people, and as we get older, we talk about all our aches and pains. There's our sorrow. Or we talk about how things are going in our jobs. That's what consumes us as human beings. But soon it is gone. And Moses said in Psalm 90, and we fly away. In other words, the same fate. That's what awaits us. And the reality is, you can't take it with you. So what's Solomon say? Well, we'll find out as we continue in this chapter. He's not saying you don't enjoy what God's given. But what he's saying is, where's your life focus? And if your life focus is on the rat race of the day, if you're devoted to trying to find meaning and pleasure and fulfillment and satisfaction in the things of this world, you're duped. Because no matter how much you accumulate, no matter how comfortable your life might be, no matter how much you save and plan and get ready for this and get ready for that, death is the move that awaits every one of us. And the reality is, you can't take it with you. You young students, make sure you study hard to be the best that you can be and to use the resources God's given you. You find the ways that you can have the benefits of this life, but you don't live for them. You use what's in this world, but you're not controlled by them, is the message from Genesis through Revelation, and Solomon is bringing home to us here. And for the rest of us, as we get up Monday morning, and the alarm goes off, and we get dressed, and we go again to the drudgery of a new work day, we need to fulfill our responsibility, not grudgingly, but not doing it as a service for men, but as a service for Christ. But at the same time, we remember no matter how much we succeed and we accomplish, the things of this world are not what really matters because we can't take it with us. And for those of us that are beyond the time of working and laboring day in and day out, and you're napping all day in your retirement, I know your lives are busy too. But the real issue is, are you prepared to meet your God? And is your life focus on what you can do today that will please Him and have eternal value? Because no matter how wealthy you are, no matter what neighborhood you live in, no matter what kind of car you drive, no matter how many toys you have to play with, when God says today your soul is required of you, you can't take anything with you. Instead, you leave it all behind for someone else to have an estate sale. So don't be preoccupied with the things that you think are so important in this life, but matter nothing to other individuals. Give others an eternal heritage, and that is a focus on our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ and the benefit that comes from those who have the privilege of being called a child of God through faith in Him. Let's pray.